From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. First day of summer today. It was a hot one in Los Angeles. Later tonight, the equations of life, and then later on, a visit to the International Space Station. Here's what's happening. The fate of hundreds of undocumented children taken from parents remains unclear a day after President Donald Trump moved to roll back his policy. Now, he ordered on Wednesday that the children be held with their parents while they're being detained on charges of crossing the border illegally. But under U.S. law, migrant children cannot be detained more than 20 days by immigration officials. The Pentagon has been asked to prepare up to 20,000 beds just for the children. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us. John, this is a very confusing situation, isn't it?
Well, it's complete chaos at the border in Brownsville. And, you know, this was an unanticipated consequence of U.S. border laws that have not been enforced, you know, for the last 20, 25 years, maybe even longer. And what you have going on right now is an attempt at some enforcement of this. This was a promise, after all, that Trump had made. We have to have borders, and the laws of the United States have to be enforced. And yet, you know, in their zealotry of incarcerating these illegal aliens that are crossing the border, they basically separated the parents because of a rule that you can't incarcerate, you know, children. And the law-breaking parents are the only ones that can be incarcerated. So they came up with this terrible situation, horrible optics of separating these kids from their parents. And I think really, George, the only fix, and it's not really a long-term fix because they really need immigration legislation right now, although I'm not sure how any immigration legislation can help, you know, lawbreakers that are crossing the border illegally. And what is Congress supposed to do? Just basically say, we don't have a border, you can come, and we're going to just look the other way and ignore everything like it's been done in the last 25 years. And that's not a solution.
No, it's not. It's a horrible situation for everybody, John. I hope we can get through it. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. On June 5th, designer Kate Spade was found dead by suicide in her New York City apartment. 55 years old, she had a teenage daughter, and she was married. Sadly, the day before her funeral, Kate Spade's father, Earl Brondison, has died. He was 89 years old. He was heartbroken. Jeez, sad story there. Coco, the thoughtful gorilla who captivated the world through her ability to use sign language and revealed a really empathetic side to great apes, has died. She was 46. The Western Lowland Gorilla passed away in her sleep Tuesday at the Gorilla Foundation's preserve in California's Santa Cruz Mountains. It was an amazing animal. States have broad authority now to force online retailers to collect potentially billions of dollars worth of sales taxes, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, siding with South Dakota in its high-profile fight with e-commerce companies. How they enact it and enforce it, that's another story. Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the Internet. How are they going to enforce something like that, Lauren?
Let me put it this way. Anyone listening right now, if you have a small online business or maybe you sell a little bit on eBay, you just got kicked in the teeth by the Supreme Court. And a vote was not along the usual liberal conservative lines, by the way. What the court has done is they have now allowed states to require that all online sellers, regardless of their location in the U.S. or their size, they have to calculate, collect, remit sales tax for the 10,000 different sales tax jurisdictions here in the U.S., each with their own rates. It's an impractical mess. It could put small businesses out of business. The big online retailers have been doing this all along now for a number of years. President Trump keeps claiming that Amazon doesn't pay sales tax. That's incorrect. I don't know why he keeps saying it. Amazon collects and pays sales tax in the 45 states that have sales taxes. But it's the little guys who aren't going to have a way to do this in a practical way, or else they're going to be spending a fortune to figure out how to do it. They're the ones getting burned.
How are they going to even know that some of these little tiny retailers have sales?
Good luck. I mean, it's a terrible situation, and it's the kind of situation that can result in uneven enforcement. Now, Congress can fix this theoretically, right? They could pass legislation to fix this. There's some talk about them doing that, but they'd have to really pass by an overwhelming margin to get it past a possible Trump veto, because apparently President Trump is in favor of this kind of change. So politics aside, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, right or left, if you have a small online business or you just even sell occasionally on eBay, you should be terrified about this right now. If you depend on this income and you need to contact your congressional representatives and tell them how you feel about this, and do it now.
It's going to be a mess. Lauren, thank you so much. Well, here we go again with the rapture. The rapture, of course, is an event many Christians believe marks the return of the Son of God, and all the believers will disappear from earth up to heaven in the twinkling of an eye. But this happens after a tribulation period, 7 years that are the first of peace and unity around the world, and then 3.5 years of war and global pandemics. A fellow by the name of Steve Fletcher, who monitors events that could signal the end of mankind, believes the rapture starts today. He said, time is up and all hell breaks loose after June 21st, 2018. He explained a number of factors that had allowed him to pinpoint the end of times, and he said the clock is now ticking. Wow. A story we've had up at coasttocoastam.com as a pilot reports a puzzling UFO encounter over Long Island in New York. It's a remarkable recording. Listen to this.
November 164 Mike Alpha. Good afternoon, Kennedy. Altimeter 29082.
161 Mike Alpha. I haven't I'll just in front of me. I don't know what it is.
You mean like a drone or something?
Don't know if it's a drone, but it's bigger than a drone.
All right, well, Mike Alpha, I don't show anything on radar.
How about that? He sees nothing on radar. The man was flying a Piper Saratoga, cruising at 6,000 feet over the town of Huntington, New York, at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. On his approach to JFK, the pilot suddenly spotted something out of the ordinary when he radioed the air traffic control for assistance, which you heard a part of. Very strange. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us?
Well, there's a lot going on in response to your question, George, and that's an interesting tape recording. I have one equally dramatic from the 22nd of June 2000 over the state of Rhode Island, and it showed up on radar. I've been promoting that sighting for a long time. It's these events are happening all the time.
All over the place.
In any event, I'd like to start by saying I was profoundly saddened by today's news of the passing of Charles Krauthammer. What a magnificent person he was, particularly in light of the hardship he had to overcome to achieve his many, many outstanding accomplishments. I'm going to miss his incisive wit and comments on many issues.
Very sharp guy.
Our webmaster just updated the UFO Center website earlier this evening. There's a particularly rich collection of reports posted there this week for people's reading pleasure. The first report I'd like to share was submitted by a woman who described herself as a waitress who lives and works in North Chesterfield, Virginia. She reports that last Saturday morning, June 16th at 4:05 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, she saw an object that was moving relatively rapidly across the morning sky. Of course, there's nothing particularly noteworthy about a light moving across the sky. There are many satellites up there. But what caught her attention was this one had three or four prominent lights being projected, I believe, down from the object. And it was initially caught her attention. But the interesting thing is, or was to her, that the object suddenly changed its direction. So instead of moving horizontally across the sky, it was now moving vertically down. After perhaps 2 seconds or so, she estimated, the object returned to its original trajectory and suddenly accelerated, she estimated, to 4 times its original velocity. Very, very unusual sighting. The next report I'd like to touch on comes from Brighton, Colorado, for a sighting that occurred earlier this week, Monday night, June 18th, at approximately 9:45 p.m. a very interesting gentleman who once served in the U.S. Navy Aviation Branch and who's currently both a private pilot and an A&P aviation mechanic with 30 years' experience, and who currently works for a major airline, was standing on his porch, he writes, admiring the overcast night sky to the west following a severe hailstorm, with hail, he writes, the size of golf balls. He comments that he'd never seen such a storm in all his life. As he continued to look to the west, a very bright light suddenly became illuminated, and it appeared to remain still, stationary, and hovered there for an estimated 2 or 3 minutes. He goes on to comment that the object or light could not have been an aircraft simply because it remained motionless save for some minor wobbling movement, and no aircraft pilot or crew would be anywhere near a hailstorm if they had a choice in the matter. Well, my last three reports come from this morning, June 21st, in rapid sequence at 3:54 a.m. this morning. Three adults were driving north on Interstate 95 near Richmond, Virginia. George, they claim they saw a disc-shaped craft radiating vermilion-green light from its undersurface, its ventral surface. And when they first saw it, it was descending rather steeply. They claim it leveled out and slowed down, and the 18-wheeler next to their car also slowed down, as did they. So they conclude that that professional driver must have seen the object as well. And finally, second report from this morning, Akron, Ohio, woman, very eloquent, very nice woman to deal with, saw a couple objects in the night sky. We're trying to figure out whether they might have been the so-called twinkling stars. But to close it off, George, a report from St. Louis, Missouri, more specifically from O'Fallon, out west of the Missouri River and the airport and St. Peter's and St. Charles. This morning at 5:45 a.m., a gentleman was driving east on Interstate 64 when he saw a very bright spherical object with very flat surfaces, very flat facets on its side, go by him at blistering speeds. And it suddenly did an immediate right-hand turn as it went to the east and abruptly changed its course. When he last saw it, it was going south, it was ascending, and it appeared to be continuing to accelerate the whole time.
Close to Lambert Airport, where you saw one.
That's where I saw my first one, and that's why I'm on Coast to Coast tonight, George, that first sighting in July of 1954 that I've written up and posted to my website. It was a dramatic one.
Thank you, Peter. Peter's website, ufocenter.com. Marijuana users may develop a lower pain tolerance, according to new research. A small study finds that people who use cannabis require higher doses of painkillers than non-users after major traumatic events like a car crash. The drug, which is legal for medical use in a majority of U.S. states now, is mainly prescribed to ease pain. Up next, Judge Jim Gray joins us. One of the things we'll talk about will be federal marijuana laws and much more next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here comes the judge. He's back. Judge James P. Gray has been a trial judge in Orange County, California since 1983 before becoming a judge. Served as a volunteer in the Peace Corps in Costa Rica, a staff judge advocate and criminal defense attorney in the Navy JAG Corps, a federal prosecutor in Los Angeles, civil litigator attorney in private law practice as well. He has been candidates for several parties running for Congress and the Senate, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Judge, good to have you back.
Well, George, thank you. It's always good to be with good people, and may I just say at the outset that we owe you a debt of thanks that you perform a real public service in getting a variety of information into the marketplace, and we desperately need that in our country today. So, doff our cap to you. Thanks, George.
Thank you, Jim. We shall not be quieted, that's for sure. We'll keep doing what we do. I feel like Paul Revere sometimes. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the country and the feds with marijuana, as some states now are beginning to legalize it. Canada, of course, trying to legalize all of it. And once it's passed into law officially, it's done there, and it's almost done. What's going on?
Well, inevitably, we're going to end up regulating and controlling marijuana. marijuana prohibition doesn't work. As I tell people, if they'll listen, that the biggest oxymoron in our world today really is the term controlled substances, because as soon as you prohibit a substance, you give up all of the controls to the bad guys, you know, the Mexican drug cartels and juvenile street gangs and other thugs. And quality control is huge. George, if you go back to alcohol prohibition, we had an enormous problem with the white lightning, with the illegal alcohol. That problem went away when we finally came to our senses and repealed alcohol prohibition. By the way, the homicide rate went down by 50% the first year after we repealed alcohol prohibition. We're going to see the same thing happen here. And with regard to marijuana, and I've never smoked marijuana, I'm not particularly interested in doing it, but there's different circumstances. You know, hemp, for heaven's sake, you could smoke hemp and get as much of a jolt out of it as your napkin. I mean, it just doesn't have any THC in it, no mind-altering properties. You mentioned Canada. We've been suckers in Canada because they've been exporting hemp to us for the last number of decades, and they've made about $1 billion a year that we could be making.
That's
so
right.
That's just silly. And medical marijuana, it's absolutely true that marijuana has some viable medical benefits. Just no question about it. So let's let people make those decisions. Let medical doctors talk with their people and prescribe under that circumstance. They're the professionals. Instead of having the head of the DEA do it, I mean, why should a police officer decide which schedule a drug should be on? So we're finally coming to the realization that what we've been doing flat out doesn't work, and we're making real progress now.
We were just talking about the opioid epidemic last night with John Rappaport, Judge, and
yes,
there's no question there are lots of people that cannot take prescription pain pills. They get sick. They just, their bodies can't take it. Medicinal marijuana for people like that, too, is a godsend, isn't it?
Well, it is. And in fact, you mentioned that I was running for office. I happened to go in Marin County in California to a medical marijuana dispensary. And I arbitrarily selected a young man who was waiting for his medicine, waiting in line. Said, well, what's going on? What are you doing? He said, you know, Judge Gray, I was in a really severe motorcycle collision about 6 months ago. And my medical doctor, I had seizures about, you know, six times a day. My medical doctor put me on opioids and I couldn't function. I was in a haze. I'd still get the seizures. I started using medical marijuana and I weaned myself off all of the narcotics, and now I can live a pretty much normal life, and I have maybe one or two seizures a week. I think, you know, my goodness, that's not my area. I'm not a professional medical professional, but my goodness, you know, wouldn't it be better to have people abusing marijuana if they come out to that instead of abusing narcotics? I mean, how smart do you have to be to figure that out? So we're getting there. It's been a long time coming, George, but the end is now in sight.
I think so, too. How many people, Judge, are in jail because of petty marijuana crimes?
Fewer than before. The problem is, you know, a lot of people with regard to these various drugs sell to support their own habits. So most police captains will tell you, oh, we don't put narcotic users in prison. Well, no, but they do because they're selling small amounts of drugs, which you have to be sympathetic for to some degree. We have lots of people in prison today, George, because of marijuana. Why? Because for one reason or another, they were on parole. They committed some kind of offense. When they get on parole, they always have the restrictions, the conditions. They use no form of illicit substance, so they're stupid and they smoke a couple of marijuana joints, which will stay in your system detectable by your analysis for 30 days, and they test dirty because they used marijuana. They're back in prison. That doesn't help anybody except the prison guards union. So we have hundreds of thousands of people in prison today and jails today because of the marijuana laws, and it's insane.
I've been hearing commercials, even on this program, of some companies that are small publicly held companies, and they are getting into the marijuana business. It could be a huge industry.
Multi-billion dollars. In fact, I've invested in some marijuana grows. It's coming. And my goodness, you know, if people are going to buy marijuana anyway, and by the way, it's the largest cash crop in California and has been for a long time, probably most other states as well, let's use the money, take it away from the Mexican cartels and juvenile street gangs,
yep,
and use it to pay our firefighters, pay our teachers, and fix our roads. I mean, how hard can that be? Plus the quality control. And you'll also have labeling signaling in there, so you'll know the strength of these various
Well, that's
things.
Important. Judge, let's talk more about this when we come back. Judge Jim Gray with us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, June 30th, I'll be in British Columbia in Canada at the Architects of the New Paradigm Conference. Come on out. They are selling tickets quickly now, but there's still room for you. Just go to coasttocoastam.com, click events at the top of the homepage, and come out to Vancouver in British Columbia. You'll need a passport or a passport card if you're coming from the States. If you're in Canada, just come on by. Simple as that. And then, of course, Saturday, August 25th, our live stage show at the Diana Wortham Theater in Asheville, North Carolina, DW Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E. That's how you get your tickets. Just put my name in the events and start clicking away, and you can pick your own seats that way. You can also get to it by going to events at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Judge Jim Gray with us. We'll take calls with the judge next hour as we talk about all kinds of issues that affect all kinds of folks. Jim, you advocated, of course, that the drug laws be really kicked back in when, 92?
It was, George, 26 years ago.
My Amazing. Gosh, you were way ahead of your time, my friend. Way
well,
ahead.
It's a curse, but from my position, a military criminal defense attorney, a federal prosecutor, a judge at that time for about 9 years, it was so abundantly clear to me that we could do it better, or we probably couldn't do it worse if we tried. And people are now beginning to see. I belong to a group called LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Action Partnership. It's a speakers group. There are about 200 legal professionals in law enforcement that are speaking the same way I am. So we're really gaining in impetus here, and it's about time.
Because I think the war on drugs has been a failure. I have advocated legalizing cocaine, heroin, everything. And am I off base or not?
No, George, I've taken the public position that drug prohibition is the biggest failed policy in the history of our country, second only to slavery, and I can back that up. Any listener can call in and present something near and dear to their heart, and I will show them how it's made worse because of drug prohibition. It's just amazingly failed policy.
And I don't think it's going to increase drug use. I really don't. I think people who are going to use drugs will find it right now, legal or otherwise.
Well, in Portugal, they found that the deaths on the highways were decreased after they legitimized and decriminalized all of these drugs because, yes, more people used marijuana, but fewer people were using alcohol. And if you're going to abuse one or the other, marijuana is not as impairing as alcohol. So there are benefits. But when it comes down to it, if they're going to use them, at least bring them closer to medical professionals that can help them instead of driving them farther away.
Exactly. And I would guess crime would go down, too, in terms of robberies and things like that. If you could regularly get your drugs, you know, at a clinic, let's say, you know, at free or whatever, it's going to reduce that, isn't it?
And that's true. In fact, that's an experiment that's gone on for now a couple of decades in Switzerland, where they actually prescribe heroin so you can get it at pharmaceutical prices and under medically controlled circumstances. The shoplifting, for example, in the neighborhood surrounding clinics went down sevenfold because if you're even arrested, you're off the program, and people realize, wow, I'm going to be behind the eight ball if I can't get these medically controlled drugs. So that's where we're going, and we will go there. But the big one, the big factor here is marijuana, because I suggest maybe 85% of everybody in the country that uses any form of illicit substance uses only marijuana. So if we were to regulate and control that for adults, the sheer numbers of everybody else in the country using every other illegal drug combined would not justify this colossal bureaucracy we have to fight the war on drugs. It's money, George. It's just money that's running this.
It really is, and I want everybody to know I'm not endorsing that you go out and use drugs, heroin, cocaine, even pot. You know, if you can avoid it, avoid it. But just, you know, by putting people in jail for things like this, It's ridiculous. It's overtaxing our jails and our resources and everything else.
Truly so. And in fact, the mandatory minimum sentences, I mean, all of these things are just, we've gone crazy with trying to resolve our problems using jails and prisons. And it just is ruining people's lives. It's ruining families. It's just tearing us apart. And by the way, we found in studies that in 1990, we were only half as successful in prosecuting homicides nationwide as we had been in 1980. Why? Because the Reagan administration, again, ratcheted up the war on drugs, and we're using all of these resources prosecuting nonviolent drug offenders. We didn't have then the resources to prosecute the robbers, rapers, and murderers. So, again, it just goes on and on.
Now, Judge, here's a problem. I think our black ops programs are funded by drug money. There's no question that after we went in and took over Afghanistan and got the Taliban out, who had controlled the poppy production to a minimum, and that's how you get heroin, that now it's flourishing. I've been told that we've even had some of our tremendous U.S. troops guarding the fields and protecting them. I think that money's going to black ops programs.
George, it's amazing how much corruption $1 million in cash can buy. You know, we tried actually for a while to take out the opium fields in Afghanistan. It was so disruptive that finally the DEA was instructed to leave them alone. All I would ask is people understand how much corruption you could buy for $1 million in cash and take it from there. It's shocking.
What else is on your bucket list these days?
Well, I'm involved with trying to reform our bail system, and that's something a little more esoteric that people really don't understand. But bail is meant to do two things. It's meant to keep people to come to trial, and it's also meant to try to keep people from being harmful to others during the interim, if they're going to threaten witnesses or the rest. But I hope everyone listening here would agree with me that it's simply flat out wrong to punish somebody before they've been convicted of an offense. And today we have in so many jurisdictions, most states, we just have a bail schedule. So if you're charged with an assault and battery or something, they'll look at the schedule, they'll figure out whether you have any prior convictions, and they'll come up with a formula saying, okay, we're going to put $7,500 in bail on you, which means that you're going to have to come up with $750, 10%, in order to be released before trial. Most people cannot afford that. About 60% of everybody in jail in Orange County, where I'm from, Los Angeles, where I think you're from, are there without having been convicted yet. And most of them are there because they just don't have access to money. So let's put in a different system that has a detention release officer, a human being, actually, that can look at you, figure out what the seriousness of the offense is, figure out if you have children in school, you're very unlikely to fly
right.
The jurisdiction.
You're not going to be a flight risk. That's right.
And we have debtor's prison, in effect, in our country today because of this, and that's something that needs to be redone also. One more point, and that is because we're so overcrowded, George, in our jails, that we are releasing early people that have been convicted, but we don't have room for them, so we release them early, which makes kind of a mockery of the system, in order to keep people that have not been convicted incarcerated.
Interesting.
So this is something we need to do.
And is bail reform being looked at all around the country?
Yes, sir. We are in California. There's a measure right now before the legislature. Texas has already done it. And by the way, too, if you have a human being doing this, say you have mental health problems, and many of them do, I can order you as a condition of release not only to have an anklet, an electric anklet on you so we can tell where you are, but you start getting mental counseling as a condition of your release. Or if you have drug problems, you can get drug counseling, that sort of thing, anger management. So we can start addressing the fundamental problems instead of just warehousing people.
Jez, I wanted to ask you a question. Yesterday, there was a road rage episode that came public in Colorado where a mother and her kids were going to the dentist, and something happened somewhere where this younger kid chased her, followed her, came out of the car shooting, wounded her, critical condition, she may die, critically injured another son, killed a 13-year-old son, and her little 8-year-old boy ran away and talked to authorities or waved down somebody and got some help, and they arrested this guy. What's going on with people these days, Judge? Are you sensing that people are just really uptight about everything?
Well, George, there have always been problems in the world. And in fact, now we are so quick with regard to our communications and the rest. So when something happens in Mozambique, or in this case, Colorado, it's as if it happened next door. It's always gone on. I tell people, and it's really important, particularly young people, boys, that, look, we're competitive. And if somebody cuts you off, you think, oh, you can't do that to me, I'm going to get you. Ask yourself the question, and have our listeners do the same. How would you act if you believed that that driver that just cut you off is on methamphetamine? Boy, if that's the case,
exactly.
After you, sir, just back off. So pretend everybody that's doing things you don't like on the road is on methamphetamines, and I actively do that as well, and it'll keep a lot of problems from occurring. So I recommend that to people. The other thing I would recommend is, you know, don't do something permanently stupid because you're temporarily angry. And that's another thing I think all of us should kind of keep in mind. And we have a lot of people in jail that have done one stupid thing in their life. But you shouldn't define somebody by the stupidest thing they've ever done either. So it's all a balance. But yes, there's some crazy things going on out there. But my answer to your question is there always has been.
A couple days ago, I'm on the 405 in Los Angeles, which is a wretched freeway. Anybody who's driven on it knows what I'm talking about. And I'm doing about 60, 65 in traffic. And moving along in my lane, and some guy, you can tell, is coming up on me really fast. And, you know, he must have been doing 85. He got about 2 feet from my bumper in the back. And, you know, he slowed down to the point where I'm doing 65. He's now doing 65 from 90 probably. And then he pulled over and off he went. Now, for a split second, I'm saying this is how road rage happens. Because the guy, me, gets ticked off at the driver who was behind me for doing what he did, and I go after him. And, you know, I stopped myself, and I got my composure and said, you know, it's not worth it, George. You talk about this all the time. But it happens like that, where you get inconsiderate drivers, sometimes drivers who make a mistake in front of somebody who's having a bad day. And, you know, and I just blew it off and said, you know, enough is enough. I'm not going to go chase this guy. But there are a lot of people who would.
Well, again, I would caution. George, had you known this guy was on methamphetamine, how would you have acted? And again, that's kind of what I'm talking about. By the way, I know many of our listeners don't know what the San Diego Freeway is. You just mentioned it. But do you know how it got its original numerical designation?
No.
People were talking as it was going in, well, how many hours do you think it'll get there on this freeway? 405, and that's the way it came out.
I love it. You've been looking at the school system. Tell me about that.
It is a tragedy, George, that we have so many schools failing our children all around the nation. And I have school choice. You know, when I moved into Orange County, we moved into Irvine. Why? Well, it has good schools, and so I could choose to go into a place that had good schools. With my other son, we decided that we didn't want him to go to a local high school. We put him in private school. If we had a teacher that was below average or couldn't teach, we would demand that our child not be in that classroom. And so would other people that have school choice. They have more economic stability and the rest. So what happens with those teachers that are poor teachers? They are shunted off to the lower economic areas, and that's where the schools are failing our children. So I strongly believe this. It came from Milton Friedman, who's a hero of mine. But, you know, he said that if we could empower the parents to choose where their government money was going to be spent for the education of their children, they would choose and demand excellence. And you know what, George? They would receive it. And when I was running as a Libertarian for vice president in 2012, I came in third, by the way, I was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it was embarrassing. I forgot where I was, and I was going through this, talking about school choice, and people were wagging their fingers at me, saying, well, Judge Gray, we don't have any bad schools anymore. We've had school choice now for 5 years. Now it's been longer than that, and all the schools have either gotten better or they've been replaced.
My, my,
we have, We have wonderful performance in our computers, in our cell phones, in our automobiles, good quality for reasonable prices because we have competition. Bring competition into the schools and we will have the same results. And all of the studies show that if the schools are comparable, the disparities among the races, among the economic areas really start vastly disappearing. We need to bring competition into schools. It will work.
My two daughters, who have grown into just wonderful young women with two kids each of their own, when they were in their teens, 13, 14, 15, 16, they were terrors. And I mean, I'm talking anything parents have had to do with teenage girls, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So we yanked them out of public school, Judge, and put them in a Catholic school, a private Catholic school, and they turned out marvelously when they graduated. Now, my son, who never gave us a problem at all, the kid was a gem. When he got to the age where it was time for high school, we yanked him out of public school, put him in the same Catholic school, and the first thing he said to us as he was starting school is, "I haven't done anything wrong." he thought it was a school for detention or something like that.
You know, we must make a decision as to what the purpose is for our educational system. Number one, to educate our children. I know, what a concept. Or number two, to protect below average teachers. And guess what we're doing today? And that's simply wrong. So we simply must allow parents to choose where that money's going to be spent, and we will be able to harvest a really stronger system. Today, our schools nationwide are not competing with other schools around the world, not for lack of money, it's just for lack of competition. And by the way, you can use your own example, to compare the numbers of administrators in the public school from which you yanked your kids as opposed to the number of percentage of administrators in that Catholic school, the better higher paid people in the Catholic school are the teachers.
Yeah, absolutely. The
teachers in the public school system, they're not dumb. They know where more money is. So they are yanked out. The better teachers end up in administration, and it's top heavy in administration. So all of that will be rectified by competition.
We're with Judge Jim Gray. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got several books called Wearing the Robe, War on Drugs, and Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It. At the top of the hour, we're going to come back and take your phone calls with the judge about some of the topics we've been talking about and about others as well. Judge, can we talk about immigration when we come back? Have you taken a stand on that?
Oh, I'm on it. That is not a surprisingly enough, it's not that hard.
No,
talk about it.
It's a tough situation.
I'll lead you out of the wilderness on this one.
Yeah, really, it's heartbreaking. At the same time, I can understand how people want to get out of the countries they're in. Who wouldn't want to live in America?
And you betcha.
But we got to do something about it because it's illegal, and we have to make things right. Let's come back in a moment. Judge Jim Gray with us. We'll take your calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM.